So I'd like to welcome you all to the podcast of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose and I'm joined today by a friend of the podcast. He's been on several times in the past, Dr. Avijit Barai. Avijit, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here again.
And since you were last here, we've always introduced you as a fellow of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care and a registrar in emergency medicine. But since we last spoke, you have now become a fellow of the Australasian College of Emergency Medicine. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a very stressful exam and I'm glad that everything is done, all sorted. Yeah, very relieved now.
A good milestone to get through. And you mentioned stress there, and that is the theme of the topic that you are going to talk to us today about, because this is something I'm not particularly familiar with, and so I'm very interested to hear what you have to say. But today you're going to talk to us about Takotsubo, or stress-induced cardiomyopathy. So my first question to you is, what is it?
Yeah, so Takotsubo is not a very common phenomenon, but I think it's very important that we know about it, especially in urgent care and also in emergency department. So let me tell you a little bit about the background of this Takotsubo. So Takotsubo is a dysfunction of the heart, which is a mimic of myocardial infarction. So it is not myocardial infarction itself, but there are a lot of similarities between Takotsubo or stress cardiomyopathy and a myocardial infarction. The main theme of this condition is that it can be very confusing. So if we don't know very well about Takotsubo, then we may miss it. So the patient presents exactly the similar way, like an NSTEMI or STEMI. And if we do the blood test, if we do the ECG, sometimes the results can be very, very confusing. Even if the patient is admitted under cardiology and if they have done angiogram, that is negative. So a little bit of history about it. In the 1990s, many of the people in Japan were found to have some abnormal presentation in the echocardiogram. They called it Takotsubo. So Takotsubo is basically, it's a pot that is used for catching the octopus in Japan. So Takotsubo is a Japanese word, and it means a little pot that is used to catch this octopus. And since then, we call this Takotsubo. But if you look at the medical literature, there are a lot of other synonyms. For example, stress cardiomyopathy, because it is associated with some stress. It's also called apical balloon syndrome, because 80% of the patients have got the apex of the left ventricle that is dilated like a balloon. Many call it broken heart syndrome. That can be a little confusing because most of the cases are associated with some negative stress, like somebody died or there's some physical or emotional stress. But if somebody is too happy, then that also can cause Takotsubo. So there is an alternative word for it that is called happy heart syndrome. So it can be really interesting. It's not very common, but as you know, that if the mind does not know, the eyes cannot see. So if we don't know very well about Takotsubo, then we may not be able to diagnose it, and that can affect the patient management. So that is the basic idea of talking about this topic in your podcast, so that the urgent care colleagues are aware of it.
Yeah, that's obviously the important part of why we're talking, is to raise the awareness, because it wasn't something that I was particularly familiar with when you emailed me. And I guess what I would like to know is, when I'm in an urgent care clinic and somebody comes in with this condition, when should I suspect it? What is going to alert me to this person maybe having Takotsubo?
Yeah, so that's very important. So in urgent care, we see quite a significant number of patients who come with chest pain, and we try to diagnose or exclude the acute myocardial infarction, whether it's an STEMI or an NSTEMI. We use different types of risk stratification tools for that. Unfortunately, Takotsubo is not included in those risk stratification tools. That's why the life becomes more challenging. That in urgent care setting or even in emergency medicine, there are some specific risk factors that we should consider. First of all, it is more commonly found in case of female. So out of five patients, four of them are female, one is male. Age group, it can happen to anybody, but commonly it is found after the age of 60 years. There is some genetic predisposition as well. As I've said, that it was commonly found in Japan in the 1990s, but subsequent studies showed that it is found all over the world. Obviously, the most important thing, other than the chest pain, when we take a little bit deeper history, then we need to ask about or inquire about if there's any other stress. For example, there may be some physical stress, some emotional stress. And the emotional stress not necessarily is always negative stress, but if there is some positive stress, as I have mentioned, if somebody is too happy, there are some reports that patient develop takutsu after honeymoon. Or if somebody is too happy, then they can develop this. That is what is called happy heart syndrome. So in short, in urgent care setting, if the patient comes with some unusual presentation along with some chest pain or arm pain and associated with some stress, which may be positive or negative stress, then think about takotsubo.
And when they describe the pain to me, are they going to be describing cardiac pain typically? Is it a crushing pain, a heavy pain with nausea and sweating and that kind of thing?
Usually, in about 80% of the patients, they present with dull chest pain. But also they can have other presentation, like they can have shortness of breath. They can have syncope. In about 1 in 10 patients can have cardiogenic shock, which is unlikely to present in urgent care setting, but we need to think about it. If the patient has got chest pain and blood pressure is very low, think about this, maybe cardiogenic shock secondary to takotsubo. Cardiac arrest is rare. Heart failure can occur. And also there will be some abnormal dysarrhythmias like a VT, VF, rare, very rare. But the commonest presentation is chest pain, dull chest pain, typical like a myocardial ischemia. But the other presentations may be there. So when the patient presents with some atypical presentation and the patient is under a lot of stress, then think about takotsubo. That is something I'd like to emphasize too.
And when people present with chest pain, after we've given them an initial once over, some observations, we pop them on the ECG machine. So what are the typical ECG findings that we might see in one of these cases?
The ECG features, again, that can be quite variable, and sometimes can confuse the clinicians. In about 40% of the patients, they develop ST elevation. So they look like just like a STEMI, but they are not STEMI. They are STEMI mimic. Some patients develop ST depression, about 10% of the patients. We might find T wave inversion, a prolonged QT interval that can be found, abnormal Q waves, and sinus tachycardia. In this extent, I'd like to mention about a patient actually that has triggered me to talk about it. This lady, she came with some chest pain for 24 hours. So we have done an ECG, and ECG was a bit abnormal. With a little bit of more history, she said that her husband died 3 weeks ago. So it was a lot of stress for the last 3 weeks. And when she came to us with the chest pain, we thought that it could be myocardial ischemia. We did the ECG, and it shows some really unusual type of presentation. So she had sinus tachycardia with T-wave inversion in almost all the leads, except in, I think, in AVR and V1. And she has got prolonged QTC. She did not have ST elevation. She did not have ST depression. The only finding we could see in that particular ECG was widespread T-wave inversion and prolonged QTC. So these are the two things that guided me to diagnose the takotsubo. And then I did an echocardiogram, which was quite obvious that this is takotsubo.
That was going to be my next question. If you have POCUS in your clinic and are skilled at doing echoes. What are the echo findings? Because you mentioned that lovely, the reason why it's called Takotsubo, and relating to that octopus pot, it's quite a distinct shape. And so I'm imagining that on an echo you see a something specific relating to the shape of that left ventricle. Is that right?
Yeah. So the bedside echocardiogram or a formal echocardiogram that is very valuable in the diagnosis of Takotsubo. Actually, that is the main investigation criteria according to the Mayo criteria. So the main things that we look for is the what we call the apical ballooning or wall motion abnormality. So what happens is that in case of Takotsubo patient, the patient can have increased catecholamines like adrenaline, noradrenaline. That cause some vasoconstriction in the apex of the heart. And that decreases the blood supply. So patient develops a bit of myocardial ischemia. And the wall of the heart that can get weak, commonly in the apex. In about 80% of the patients, there is weakening of the apex of the heart. So instead of getting narrow apex of the heart, it becomes dilated. That happens in 80% of the cases. And that can be very well demonstrated in the bedside echocardiogram or a formal echocardiogram. A few patients can have dilatation in the mid-ventricle or even in the base. So that is the main echocardiographic feature. In my YouTube video, I have got a couple of videos on this. I'll show you, send you the link. Patient also can have reduced ejection fraction, and biventricular involvement can happen in about 1 in 3 patients. I know that many of the clinicians in the ED and also in urgent care, they are very keen to use the bedside echocardiogram. And if they just put the probe and if they can easily find that the patient can have this apical ballooning, that is a classic presentation of Takotsubo.
So once you've made the diagnosis or you're strongly suspicious of the diagnosis, what's the management of these patients? How should we be managing them in an urgent care setting?
So in case of the urgent care setting, the management, initial management we'll treat as a myocardial ischemia, because until unless we got the angiogram and a formal echocardiogram, we cannot actually say that definitely this is Takotsubo. So the management will be initially we'll give oxygen. If the patient has got low oxygen saturation, we'll give painkillers. For example, we can give fentanyl or morphine. If the patient is in pain, keep them comfortable. That will decrease the stress. We'll give aspirin 300 milligram orally. We can also give ticagrelor or clopidogrel, depending on the urgent care protocol. If you don't have, that's fine. The next thing in urgent care setting, I would say, talk to a friend in the cardiology department and send the patient to the nearest emergency department. The main reason is this is not an MI. This is not a myocardial infraction in that sense, but in urgent care setting, it can be quite challenging to differentiate a myocardial infraction from a Takotsubo. So my suggestion is give some initial management, some painkiller, oxygen, aspirin, ticagrelor, or clopidogrel, and transfer the patient to the emergency department or cardiology for further management. And that may include a formal echocardiogram, angiogram, but again, that is beyond the expertise of the urgent care.
So as you say, this isn't myocardial ischemia in the classic MI setting. So what can the negative outcomes of this condition be? What can happen to patients with Takotsubo? What are the negatives that we need to be aware of?
So in the first part of your question, that in case of the myocardial infraction, usually one specific coronary artery is involved, or maybe multiple coronary arteries involved. But in case of Takotsubo, it is not specific to a particular coronary artery. That is why it is different. The main problem that can happen in this type of patients is if we don't diagnose it, and if the patient is discharged, patient has got a risk that they can develop cardiogenic shock, they can develop heart failure, and that can be a life-threatening problem. In rare occasions, patient can even develop ventricular tachycardia or ventricular fibrillation. Again, these are the life-threatening complications. So I am emphasizing again and again that if the patient has got stress and coming with some atypical presentation that may or may not include chest pain, we need to consider Takotsubo because it can have some bad prognosis if it is not managed in an appropriate setting.
So the 60-year-old patient with ECG changes, we're probably not going to be thinking of this necessarily. We'll be referring them because they've got chest pain and they've got the ECG changes. But the people that we probably need to be a little bit more wary of are the younger patients who have got symptoms but normal, a normal exam and maybe a normal ECG, but have that significant stress event that should make us maybe consider that this person needs some further workup from a cardiological perspective. Is that the right sort of way to think of this?
Absolutely, yes. So as I've said, that the typical risk stratification tools, like whether you use TIMI score, EDAC score, HART score, these are applicable for the MI patients. These are not applicable for the Takotsubo patients. So there may be young patient under a lot of stress, which may be negative stress or positive stress. They not necessarily have got chest pain. In most of the cases, they develop chest pain, but they can develop shortness of breath. They can have syncope. So we need to keep in mind that if the patient is under a lot of stress and presenting with some atypical presentation, it may be Takotsubo. And before sending these patients home, we need to have some workup. If it is chest pain, that makes the life a little easier, because then we can sell the patient to cardiologist or to the emergency department that this patient got chest pain. So it can be acute myocardial ischemia or infarction. But if it is not a chest pain, then that makes the really, really difficult and challenging thing. And that is what I would like to emphasize, that if the patient is under a lot of stress, then think about Takotsubo, even if the patient does not have chest pain.
And in those settings, a normal echo would be enough in the absence of chest pain to exclude Takotsubo. You wouldn't be thinking any, you would, in an ED, for example, you wouldn't be referring that patient on for angiograms if they haven't got the chest pain, but they had a normal echo. Would that be right?
It needs to be a formal echo. I mean, I can do bedside echo. I am starting my the ultrasound fellowship in a few weeks' time. That may give me more comfort in doing the bedside echo. But in urgent care setting, I would suggest that we need a formal echocardiogram before you can confidently exclude Takotsubo. So I would suggest, even if the patient has got bedside echocardiogram normal, I cannot exclude the Takotsubo, because in 80% of the cases that affects apex, which can be picked up by bedside echocardiogram, but in remaining 20% of the patients, they can have mid-ventricular dilatation, they can have basal dilatation. So that can be really challenging in a patient, in a clinician who did not have the formal echocardiographic training. So I would suggest still we need to consult the cardiologist for bedside echocardiogram, a formal echocardiogram, or admission.
So as we said, if the person has chest pain that is fairly typical, and obviously ECG changes, that makes it quite easy. It's those little ones that are going to require us to just be thinking of it. And so hopefully hearing this and reviewing the videos that you've got on your YouTube site will make people think of Takotsubo, particularly in that person who's under an abnormal level of stress or a sequence of significant abnormal stresses in their life. And therefore, if we're thinking about it, we're not likely to miss it. But it is relatively rare, as you said, so it's obviously not going to be happening to everybody, but we need to be thinking of it at least. Do you have any other little tips and tricks around this topic that you've found in your reading or your research?
Yes. So a couple of things. Although it is rare, but it is not that rare. So about 1 to 2% of the patients who have got raised troponin are found to be have takotsubo. So if you see 100 patients, I'm pretty sure you have seen 100 patients with chest pain over the next year or two with race troponin, and one or two of them maybe takotsubo. So that is what the medical literature shows. Now, the main tips that I would like to emphasize is history taking. That is very, very important. And it is not all about chest pain. It's about the other things. What is the social circumstances? If the patient is under some stress, so it can be physical stress, like some emotional stress, like, for example, death of the near or dear ones. If there is domestic abuse, if there is some arguments, some catastrophic medical diagnosis like a terminal cancer, some financial loss, natural disaster in earthquake. That's interesting. In Christchurch, there was an earthquake in 2011, and many people developed takotsubo after that in Christchurch. Acute medical illness, for example, ischemic intracranial hemorrhage, that can cause takotsubo. During my exam a couple of months ago, I was under a lot of stress. I thought that I might develop takotsubo as well. It is the history taking that actually the real most important thing in including or excluding takotsubo. And then we need to consider the clinical presentations that I have said. It can be chest pain, but also patient can have other presentations like shortness of breath, syncope. And this type of presentation can happen to anybody. So even if a young patient comes with chest pain, shortness of breath, or syncope, I would like to think about takotsubo. And usual workup will be the similar. So we will do ECG, 12-lead ECG, blood tests, such as troponin. We'll consult the cardiology or send the patient to ED for echocardiogram admission and further workup. So that will be, in short, the main tips and tricks of takotsubo, really.
And you mentioned earlier your YouTube account, your YouTube channel, that has some videos on this topic. Can you tell us where we can find that?
Yeah, so I'll send you a link. So if someone writes or search youtube.com/Dr. Barai, that is D-R-B-A-R-A-I, so that will take them to my channel. And I'll send you a specific link for this particular video. There are some clips. There are a lot of animations and a lot of information which I feel may be useful to your audience. In urgent care and in emergency medicine, this is a topic that's quite interesting, and we should not miss it. That's all I can say.
My thanks to Avijit for talking to the podcast. You can find links to his YouTube videos on the topic in the show notes. And if you have any comments, questions, corrections, or suggestions, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. Now we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then, but for now, thanks for listening.